I am scheduled to have a special guest, at least for the first hour of this 8 o'clock Eastern block. So we may be getting that call at any moment here. In the meantime, if you guys are interested in some of the historical audiobook podcasts that I do, I'm doing a running series on Henry Ford's The International Jew. And I'm about 24 segments in. I do a little bit over an hour, a little bit under an hour every week. I'm about halfway through the entire four-volume set. If you've never read it and you've wanted to, you can find it at tedmidward.com. You can also find it on YouTube. We've got a call coming in here. Let me take it. Hello, is this Jason?
Yeah, this is Jason.
Hey, Jason, it's Ted. Thanks for being with me tonight. I really appreciate your time.
Sure.
Hey, Happy New Year to you.
Happy New Year.
Is it single digits cold out there in Virginia like it is here in the Midwest?
It might be. I don't know. It's been getting pretty cold. Definitely last night went below 10 digits for sure. It's been hovering around 15 for a while.
Let me start off, Jason, by saying just right off the bat, I've got to give it to you. You've got some stones of steel. I got to say, it's quite refreshing to see white men stand up to the power structure and not be cowed down and not give in. And I really got to tip my hat to you. I wanted to start off for some of the listeners here on Eurofolk Radio. I'm sure most of them are familiar with you. If not, why don't you give us a little bit about your background? I understand you're a journalist by trade, right? And that you're originally from Charlottesville?
Yeah, I'm from Charlottesville. I've done a lot of blue-collar work. I'm college-educated, but I've been in the trades. And I started a website, which was originally jasonkessler.net. Now it's jasonkessler.us for having my domain seized after United Right. But anyhow, I started this website, and it was originally for me to write poetry and creative fiction. I was writing some novels and stuff. And I got involved in the political stuff because we had this fight over Confederate statue, Robert E. Lee, and this vice mayor, Wes Bellamy, who's this Afrocentric, anti-white. And everybody who was supporting the monuments felt really oppressed by this guy, and I knew that he hated white people because of his statement. So I went on Twitter and I found a lot of tweets that confirmed his hatred for white people, where he was saying, you know, he hates seeing white people around town, and his favorite thing about being down south is seeing the look on the face of little white men when they have to look up to a black man, all kinds of stuff. So I published that, and it was sort of a sensation, and got him removed from the Virginia Board of Education and his teaching job. And that kicked me off doing journalism. So I was able to write for Daily Caller. I wrote for VDare. I've written for Got News and, of course, my own website. And I got into activism because I really cared about what was going on with, you know, the white genocide agenda and all this anti-white sentiment in society, and that's what led me to organize Unite the Right.
Right. Now, just for the listeners out there that aren't familiar, you were the chief organizer of that rally. Do you want to talk a little bit about how you came to that decision and decided to do that?
Well, as I was doing journalism, I was going around, I went out to California to cover a speech that Ann Coulter was supposed to do, and I met a lot of people there. I met Nathan D'Amigo, I met Bake Stickman, I met Bake D'Alaska. When I was covering the protest that the alt-right did of the Syrian missile strikes in D.C., it wasn't the first time, but I met Richard Spencer and Mike Enoch and some other folks there. And it just so happened that they had planned to do a rally about the monument, and that was the May 13th, the first Seville event. And I didn't organize that one, but I think that they were probably influenced by some of the articles I'd written about the monuments for VDare. And And after that event, I was really excited, and I felt like there was an opportunity to do a big tip event because of all these people that I'd met through doing this journalism. So I decided to have this big event and really try and focus our energies as a pro-white movement, because there's so many people with this idea on economics or this idea on this or that. And to me, it's just pro-white through and through. I mean, that's the central issue for me, is fixing that and then fixing the issues with how feminism and the gender issues have screwed up society. But it's all cultural for me. And pretty much everybody in the movement has those things in common. So it seems like we should be natural allies to each other.
I wanted to ask you who in the alt-right that you were, that you're pretty close to. I don't know how close you are or how much contact you have with Spencer, or you mentioned Nathan D'Amigo, or even Anglin or Enoch. Are you pretty close with those guys now after everything that's happened?
Well, I saw Enoch last night at a New Year's party. So, yeah, I've been getting kind of close to the TRS guys. They've been pretty supportive of me. In particular, the guys at Identity Dixie and Rebel Yell, they're Southern nationalists, so they gravitated towards somebody here in the South in the state of Virginia who was standing up for these Confederate monuments. And they've really stood by me through thick and thin. They're very, very great guys. And, you know, some people I know more and some people I know less. Some people are very guarded. Some people are harder to get close to because they're just inundated with people wanting to talk to them all the time. And then there's other folks who I've been able to have closer conversations with, you know, like Cantwell is a guy, you know, I recall before Unite the Right, you know, we had some good conversations and so forth. And I felt like, yeah, this is a really solid dude. And by and large, you know, I mean, there's been a few back and forth with a few people. After Unite the Right, everybody was kind of frazzled about the government crackdown and the censorship and all that. But for the most part, I have good relationships with everybody, and I think everybody has something to contribute.
You know what? I really enjoyed, and I saw these over the past 4 to 6 weeks here on YouTube. Someone uploaded, I think it was Picking Woke or Pickling Woke, those calls that you had with Cantwell on the jail phone system. Those were good. I was glad you decided to record those and share them.
Yeah, I'm glad that account was putting those calls up. And I talked to Cantwell about that. I was asking him, you know, what's the best way to share your content? Because he's streaming on Gab now. He's been banned from a lot of platforms, and this Picking Woke account is posting some of his stuff. And I said, is that the best way to share your stuff? And he said, well, it doesn't matter to me, you know. So he endorses the Picking Woke channel, and I'm glad that they put up our conversations, because I'd originally posted them to SoundCloud, and I guess I figured it was on borrowed time. But you know, these liberal tech sites, I mean, they're so shitty, and they love to censor us, but they do have really good integration into websites if you want to embed them into your WordPress site or whatever. So I was putting off getting off of SoundCloud, and then SoundCloud shut me down, and I have all those audio recordings, but I don't have them uploaded.
Okay, could we go into the Charlottesville rally? You were one of the, if not the chief organizer, and basically what happened here is that the government of Charlottesville more or less double-crossed you and your rally with your court-ordered permit, right? And then, to add insult to injury, they blamed right-wing rally-goers for the violence that occurred. And then, on top of that, they blamed what appears to be a cardiac arrest death of this woman, Heather Heyer, on this man, James Fields. That my first knee-jerk reaction to that, Jason, when I saw the video, is that he was fleeing for his life after a crowd gathered around his car. Please correct me if I'm wrong here. Tell us what happened, and tell us what you think about James Fields and his innocence or guilt in this.
Well, there's two separate things. There's me, and then there's James Fields. For me, a lot of the stuff that I did, involved in the planning, if you weren't in the servers that we're using to have our community and talk about the event, you might not have known a lot of the things that I was doing. My primary focus was, as I was saying before, bringing all the people together and then, filing for the permit, trying to interface with the police officers, but I wasn't really handling the security. I was not really the primary liaison to the police. You know, I sort of handed off some of the planning for that to some other folks, but I did that and I sort of kept the peace between the various factions because people will fight over just about anything. There are so many little things that people will fight about, and it's been something that has plagued the movement for a long time, and I think I was pretty successfully able to keep the right united up through the event. So that was accomplished. And also the legal battle, you know, that was a big thing that people might not know about. It if the rally hadn't been such a huge international story and the court decision didn't come right on the heels of that, it might have gotten out more. But they tried to deny the permit within like a week of the event. So I filed a lawsuit along with the ACLU and a local institute called the Rutherford Institute to have the rally reinstated to Lee Park because it's a rally in support of the Lee Monument. If they're trying to move the rally from there, they're infringing our free speech. And we won that. And that's part of federal free speech law. Now you can look up Jason Kessler versus City of Charlottesville. And I'm sure there's going to be a part two coming up soon. Because we're trying to get another permit. So that was all great stuff. But the part of the chaos that ensued was because, you know, in that week leading up, I was working my ass off to make sure we won that court case. I was finding bits of social media postings from the mayor and vice mayor where they were condemning our ideas and showing how biased they were against our speech and lots of other little things. And so when we were waiting during that period while the court decision was happening, the city councilors had barred the police from talking about safety stuff with me. So the main problem was that there were all these Antifa in front of the venue and they were attacking our people on the way in and fights erupted. And I was bringing that issue specifically up to the city manager and the police department until I was banned from talking to them about it. So when they reversed the permit decision in court the night before, we lost a crucial week of working out those issues. So on to the James Field thing, I don't know what to believe from that because there's so much evidence that hasn't come out yet, but I'm inclined to believe that he was innocent. Here is what I've been able to recollect is I think that he was just a random guy, not affiliated with any organization, any people. In court, they said he was a fan of one of the speakers. They didn't say which speaker. So he came on his own. He really wasn't up to date on the instructions we were giving to people because I was telling folks not to park in the area. But I guess he had parked in the area. And there's video of him sort of driving around the downtown area before the accident. So I believe that he was lost. So he ended up on a street that's called 4th Street, and it crosses over the downtown mall, which is a pedestrian area where people walk back and forth. And there was supposed to be a police officer blocking that intersection because it was supposed to be closed. It was a female police officer who normally works as like a school police officer, a monitor or something. And that police officer got scared when they declared the unlawful assembly and started pushing people out. There were a lot of black criminals following people with flamethrowers and other weapons. So she abandoned her post. Later, other police officers came behind and got in her police vehicle, which was blocking 4th Street, and moved it. So they left only a little sawhorse in place. So people started driving around the sawhorse and going on to 4th Street. And there's this that white woman in this purple van who drives to the end of that street and parks, and you can see it in some of the videos, and she's sitting there like laughing, shooting video, she's getting out of her van and walking around. And so other cars see that van and think the street is open. They start piling in behind her. Then this whole mob of people, including Heather Heyer, start marching up the downtown mall. Many of them have baseball bats and other weapons. They're wearing masks. And James Fields, I think, saw those cars and thought that's the way to leave the downtown area because all these other cars were going that way. So when he got that way, he was blocked. He was probably attacked. Now, there's some video that they played in court that is not publicly available, but I did see it, and it seems to show James Fields backing up and then driving, accelerating. But it's out of context. So it seems like he might have felt trapped and tried to drive through. And at that point, he was struck with some kind of a weapon. I also found somebody that claimed that rocks were being thrown at his vehicle, and he was covered in urine when they pulled him over. It wasn't his pants, it was his shirt. So either while he was in the vehicle or while he was marching to the event, he was also attacked with some of those balloons filled with urine that the Antifa were throwing.
Now, you don't think that Heather was actually struck by the car, right?
I think that she was. I think that is a bit of fake news that has been spread by people. They want to believe that she wasn't. I'm not sure if she was hit by his vehicle, because his vehicle rear-ended another vehicle, and then that vehicle rear-ended a third vehicle. So she could have been hit by the other cars in that cascade. But it's my understanding that she did suffer some kind of blunt force trauma, and that's what triggered the cardiac arrest. So in the video where Heather Heyer's mother, Susan Bro, says that she died of a heart attack, I mean, that's technically true, but it was a cardiac arrest that was, provoked by blunt force trauma. Everything everybody says about her health problems play into it. Of course, she was a cigarette smoker. She was morbidly obese. Might she still be alive if those health problems weren't in place? Perhaps. But, it is what it is. It doesn't do James Fields any favors.
Is Fields still being held? What's the situation with his case?
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah, he's being charged with a ton of felonies. And they were originally charging him with second-degree murder. They bumped it up to first-degree murder, which means that they think that it was premeditated. I really have a hard time believing that. But, the police tell me that they have evidence that they haven't presented yet, so we'll see what they present. But it's very hard for me to believe that this guy came down to hurt anybody. When they searched his vehicle, he didn't have any weapons. I mean, you think about these Muslim terrorist attackers who are clearly planning well ahead of time to injure, maim, and kill people. They will usually have like a van. They'll have bomb devices in the vehicle. They'll have guns. And then they'll just run through a crowd of people, not in a pedestrian in an explicitly pedestrian area, not like a road which should have been closed and people were on when they shouldn't have been during a state of emergency. And so they'll run through the people, then they'll get out firing their guns, what have you. James Fields didn't have any weapons. So you'd think if he came down specifically to try and hurt people, he would have some other kind of weapons. How was he supposed to know that there was going to be this big mob of people walking up the street that should have been closed if the police officer hadn't abandoned her post?
We've just, we're the first of the year here. Obviously, we've had Christmas and Thanksgiving. Tell me about close friends and family friends that you've had growing up and into adulthood. What has been their reaction after everything happened with Unite the Right?
Wow. I've gone through a lot of changes in life. People consistently underestimate how much they change as a person over a period of like 10 years. There's studies that show that. And so I really don't keep in fabulous touch with people I went to high school with. And I really haven't heard anything from those people since this whole thing has gone down. But the people that I'm friends with here in Charlottesville that I've known, you know, it's funny, you know, because I've had people who were extremely close to me, but they don't want to get tarred with that racist brush. You know, it's not even the Unite the Right thing. It's that they're calling me a white supremacist, neo-Nazi, blah, blah, blah. And there's such a heavy stigma on people, and they have businesses, they have families. So a lot of people are still quietly supportive, but they sort of back away and they virtue signal. And there are a few people here and there that disavow. But, you know, I think that there's a core group of people who are becoming new friends who are able to stick with me through this struggle, because it's a very intense struggle and it takes a certain type of person to be able to handle that scrutiny.
Oh, absolutely. And listen, just the small things and my friends and family over the years and me developing the views that I have, which are very similar to yours and everyone else's in the alt-right, I mean, it really is. It's tough to face that fear of, oh my God, what is everyone going to say? What are they going to think? And you've kind of done it. You've done it in front of the world, and you've really got it behind you now, and you probably feel a little bit liberated and maybe got it off your chest. But what about your parents? What about siblings? What have they said to you over the holidays?
Yeah, nobody in my family is really giving me a hard time, except that, you know, I have some family that are perhaps not as enthusiastic about this as I am. They don't understand a lot of stuff. When they hear about, for instance, the alt-right criticizing Jewish power in the United States and this, you know, insane obsession with Israel, they don't get that, because some people in my family are very evangelical Christian and they're in this mindset that, you know, the Jews are the chosen people and all this other stuff. And I'm trying to tell them, you know, you don't understand how much of this awful propaganda that's coming out in Hollywood and all the fake news that's coming out is being influenced by this small group of people. They're only 2% of the population. And you look at the key positions in the Hollywood and the news media, they're probably over 50% of these key positions. So it's entirely valid to criticize them. You wouldn't allow any other group of people to amass that much power. And there's this culture of fear and silence about criticizing them. So that's an issue. And they don't like the fact that I keep pressing forward. They're like, you know, maybe you ought to leave it alone, but there's no way in my mind that I could leave it alone. I wouldn't be able to have respect for myself. You know, at the city of Charlottesville thinks that it's won by cracking down on our rights. They think they can get away with that. And perhaps if they were dealing with someone else who is not as dedicated to see this thing through, they would have won. They would be able to just crack down on our rights and, you know, the world moves on. But I'm already planning a new rally for 2018, and it's specifically to prove the point that you cannot deny us as American citizens our rights, and we are going to say the things that we've got to say, because now is the time to stand up for our people. We don't have time for cowardice. We need more people to step up to the plate.
Oh, absolutely. The urgency is there, and we don't have decades or generations to kind of hope for the best and cross our fingers and hope everything goes right. People have to pull their head out of the sand. I was glad to hear what you said about your friends and family's opinions. You cannot live in fear of what other people think. And, you know, it's kind of funny. We have this thing going on now in our society to where if you deny that there's two genders, if you deny that being straight or gay, if you come out in favor of the propaganda, the pro-gay propaganda, the pro-gender neutrality BS, you get applauded. But if you stand for traditionalism, if you stand for conservative values, values and beliefs and opinions that our grandparents and great-grandparents had, all of a sudden, you're public enemy number one.
Yeah, the compulsion to conform to societal norms is powerful. And this propaganda that they're putting out, this cultural Marxist stuff, is in all of the music, it's in all the news media, it's in all the movies. And it's hard for people to rebel beyond that unless they're a special class of person. I remember when I was taking a psychology course in college, and they were talking about the kinds of morality that people have, and people have different levels of complexity to their morality. I mean, there's some people who just don't even think about things. They just think, well, this is against the law, so it's bad. This is not against the law, so it's good. Or, you know, the people on TV are telling me that this is good and that's bad, so I'll go along with it. And then there's people who make up their own mind for themselves, and they critically think, why is this right? Why is this wrong? And it's that kind of person that's able to break through the propaganda, because they hear the fake news on NPR or MSNBC or Fox News, and they just get to a point where they say, this is not right. Where am I losing my mind? And that's when people end up on places like 4chan, or they start getting some of the real information that's out there on Twitter or Gab or YouTube, what have you. And they realize that it's all a bunch of lies.
Right. Now, I was not, I don't have staunch extreme right-wing or alt-right parents or family or anything like that. I came from kind of middle to upper class, super yuppie kind of background, where, and the public school system seems to, by default, just turn people into moderate liberals in my experience. And I think you've kind of had the same thing. You're kind of a recent convert to this. What was it that made you turn the tide and see things as they really are? What kind of woke you up?
Well, I mean, really, there was no competitive vision in my mind other than this sort of modern moderate liberalism. I'm in Charlottesville. It's one of the most liberal cities in all of America. And you listen to a channel like NPR and they make you sound like you're an idiot if you're conservative. They bring out one study after another by these liberal scientists, social scientists, to say, oh, well, everything that you believe is a liberal is 100% backed by science, and everything the conservatives believe is completely stupid. But there are so many things that contradict what they're saying, you know, just common sense things, like when it comes to the gender stuff. Everybody knows that women live longer than men, so why is it that every story that they're doing on NPR is about women's health? And when I go onto the hospital's website, all of the studies that they're doing that are gender related are for women's health instead of men's health. Shouldn't they be trying to bridge that gap? And then they're talking about the wage gap and this kind of stuff. And common sense tells you that a lot of these jobs that are high paying for men are very dangerous jobs that women don't want to do, like driving a big rig tractor trailer, or working on an oil rig in the middle of the ocean, or being a garbage man. The women only want to do these high status jobs where they get to wear, you know, nice clothes, and people tell them how important they are and listen to their ideas, and they feel emotionally validated by that. So that kind of stuff really started me off on this path. And then with the racial stuff, I think a lot of it started with, there was this woman, Justine Zacco, I believe, who was working for a PR firm, and she was flying to South Africa. And she put out this just normal, I don't know, sort of edgy joke about, well, I'm going to Africa, hope I don't get AIDS, just kidding, I'm white. And it wasn't even like a right wing joke. It was sort of like a Sarah Silverman, like Amy Schumer type of joke. Those shitlid women were making jokes like that, you know, 10 years ago or whatever. But while she was in the air and she didn't have access to the internet, all these people were saying, fuck this white bitch. You know, we're going to get her fired. They were sending her rape threats and death threats. And by the time she hit the ground, her life was over. She'd lost her job. She'd become a pariah. And you see that happening all the time, but yet you have a situation like Wes Bellamy, who is able to say white women are the devil. It ain't rape if she moans. You know, I hate seeing white people around town, et cetera, et cetera. And he didn't lose his job on the city council over that. The other city councilors didn't even condemn his statement. So that clear double standard that's going on in our society really pissed me off, because it's unjust. And specifically, I always say that it was about the shootings of the black men. Because I when I was a liberal, I would listen to NPR. And NPR would keep jumping around to these stories. And I think I was still on the liberal bandwagon when the Trayvon Martin thing happened. But then when all the other shootings happened, I was like, well, hold on a second. It seems like there might be more to this, because, for instance, they found Zimmerman not guilty, you know, and then a lot of these other cases, Michael Brown, that situation with Darren Wilson and Ferguson was investigated by the Obama Justice Department, and Eric Holder, a black man, and even they found that Darren Wilson was justified in his use of force. And I came to realize that basically they were just stirring up anger within this apathetic black voting bloc that doesn't turn out very well. And they were inciting riots against white people. At the time, I was a fan of the Baltimore Orioles. I was watching a lot of baseball games. And when that guy Freddie Gray died, Freddie Gray was a black man. I guess he was put into a police van, and then it was driven kind of rough, and he ended up breaking his neck and dying. And they tried to blame that on white people, but there were 8 police officers, I believe, that were arrested for that thing, and most of them were black or non-white. You had a black chief of police, black mayor, black DA, and they're still blaming this stuff on white people. So I watch as these nice, clean-cut white people in their Baltimore Orioles hats stood in line to get into a game, and because of all this fake news BS about these supposedly innocent black people, these blacks were rioting in the street. They were jumping up and down on cars. They were picking up trash cans and sawhorses and throwing them around. And these white people were trying to reason with them. They were saying, no, we're not the racist white people. We're good. We didn't do anything to you. And the black people were screaming back at them, "F you, whitey." And that was it for me. I was like, no, I'm done with this stuff. I'm fighting for my people.
Yeah, you know, it's funny how that works. And just as an example of what you're saying, it's my belief that the riots and the black lawlessness of recent years in Ferguson, Missouri, in Baltimore, in Milwaukee, and then, of course, the Black Lives Matter shooting in Dallas, I think these events have awakened more white people than any of these pro-white podcasts like mine and others could ever do. Now, all the white genocide promoters on social media, all these events have helped wake up more white people than any single activist ever could in a single lifetime. And it seems to me that these events, even though they are unfortunate and people are victimized, these things really are the key to persuading people to see things our way. Do you agree that these things were big boosts for our side politically?
Oh, yeah, definitely. There were so many double standards within society. People, just from common sense, could see all this anti-white race war propaganda that they're putting out there. And then the crazy feminist stuff, and now the tranny stuff. And when people start to get woken up, you know, they could just feel like, you know, am I going insane? Everything out there is saying that it's okay to give 12-year-old kids hormone replacement and change their gender and make them sterile for the rest of their lives. Is it wrong for me to think that that's a bad thing? And that's where the podcast and the internet community comes in. There's a whole group of people who are able to say, look, you just took the red pill. That's what happened. And we've all seen it. And it goes much deeper than you could have ever realized.
Now, you mentioned this briefly a while ago. What is your position on the Jewish question? Is there something going on here, or is it just racist conspiracy theory from the right wing?
No, there definitely does seem to be something going on. There's competition for resources within society between ethnic groups, and each ethnic group seems to have their own strategies. The Jewish people tend to have a strategy which is very bad for European societies. I think that it's okay for them to want to have a nation of their own in Israel, and they should probably all be there. You know, they're not all bad. I'm not going to say they're all bad, but they have a tendency to be very high IQ and to subvert the traditional family and the norms of society. They hate nationalism, and they're always trying to bring in these waves of immigration, creating a lot of social change through the arts and through academics, which are subversive against the traditional family in favor of things like pornography and iconoclasm. They operate like a secret society. At the end of the day, that's the real issue, is that there's a lot of nepotism amongst their group, and they make sure that one another get into these prestigious positions in places like Harvard, where I think that they're about 24% of the class. And when you graduate from Harvard, you've got it made. And beyond that, you look at how many of them are in these powerful positions in Hollywood and in the banking industry. They controlled the Federal Reserve for decades, for generations, really, because they're looking out for one another, and they're making sure that their tribe is overrepresented in these positions of power. And it's incredible when leftists talk about the 1%. I mean, who do you think the 1% is? They're the 2%. They're, I think, 40% of that top 1%. So they're hoarding these positions of power in the media, where they can put out these narratives, which are essentially ethnic warfare. What I've come to believe is that they're trying to do World War II in reverse. They're not alone in that, but I think that they're conducting a program of social upheaval through mass immigration policies and anti-white propaganda in the entertainment and news industry, which is meant to genocide the white race. So that's something that we have to deal with. We have to stop that.
How has your outlook changed about what we need to do, how we can wake people up since Charlottesville? Am I correct in saying that you're trying to approach this from like a civil rights point of view? Tell us more about what you're thinking here.
Yeah, I think that we need to adopt a civil rights strategy, including nonviolence. There's a lot of things that blacks and their Jewish attorneys were able to accomplish in the civil rights era, and in particularly in the 1960s. And people in our pro-white movement have been very dismissive of that stuff, because they maybe don't want to acknowledge that, you know, these non-white people were able to do these strategies that were unquestionably effective. But I think that within a constitutional democracy, the civil rights strategy is right, because if you think that fighting in the street is going to solve these issues that we're talking about, it's not. We do not have the populist swell that we need for that. What we need to do is use the civil rights strategy, which is essentially gaming the system. It's knowing where the laws are, treading the line, allowing the enemy to cross that line, and then fighting them in court. And that's what Unite the Right has really triggered, is the beginning of a real white civil rights movement. We are going to be fighting the city of Charlottesville in court over their First Amendment violations. And we're going to get into a lot of the racial discrimination against white people that's going on in this city, because what happened in Charlottesville is symbolic of the larger struggle. The fact that they're deplatforming and censoring us anytime we try and stand up for ourselves and say we have a right to exist. They are trying to tear down any trace of us. You know, you see it in Hollywood where they're casting these black actors to play traditionally European roles like Sherlock Holmes or Achilles. And when they tear down these monuments, starting with the Confederate guys and moving on to the founding fathers, they're trying to wipe away any trace of the fact that America was a white nation. It was founded by white European men, and it reflected our values. And they're trying to take that away and rebrand it as America is a nation of immigrants. And they don't mean just any immigrants. They mean non-white immigrants. It's a program of replacement and ethnic cleansing. So when Wes Bellamy, who admits that he hates white people, is trying to tear down those statues, he's trying to tear down our people. And their other policies are, you know, giving asylum for illegal immigrants and bringing in all these Muslims from the Middle East, Syrian refugees. So they're on board for the whole white genocide kit and caboodle. So they really don't want us to speak, because even the normie conservatives, know what's going on. They read Breitbart and they get a sense of the fact that these Muslims are taking over communities in Europe, and they're flooding these Africans into Europe, and they're flooding America with these Latinos from south of the border. And they're not comfortable with it. They don't like the idea that they used to be able to go to their grocery store and recognize everybody from their church or other community gatherings. And now half of the people there don't look like them. They're not even speaking English, and they're just coming here to pillage our resources as a nation that our ancestors built up.
Right, right. And it's hard to break through to that Breitbart conservative kind of George W. Bush supporter, because like you pointed out, you can talk about the Muslims all day, but when you point out the facts about Jewish power and control, then it's a problem, right? Then it's an issue. Then you're a racist. And if we could just get them and show them that Jews and Muslims work together, and there's several videos of rabbis on like RT and Press TV admitting this, that they're doing this in Europe. But I think you're on the right track. I think you you really shook up not only national news but also internationally with what you guys pulled off in Charlottesville. And like I said, boy, you got stones of steel. My hat's off to you. We're coming up. We've got about 14 minutes left, and let me throw some other stories, other questions here out at you. Have you been following this train attack, this train derailment incident out in the Pacific Northwest?
I haven't followed it all that much. I know some people were speculating about Antifa sabotaging the track. What's the latest on that?
Yeah, that's the speculation I've heard as well, and I haven't heard anything more. I thought maybe you you might have dug into it a little bit.
I don't think it ended up being that. There was an article on it's going down maybe like 4 months before this train derailment, and they were bragging about the fact that they were sabotaging the tracks because they were I don't know, they were using it to ship some oil pipeline stuff, something like that. I don't, lefty politics stuff that I don't care about. And they took the article down. But there was no evidence that Antifa had actually sabotaged the specific tracks that that train derailed on. So I think that, while interesting, it shows that Antifa is doing activity that could lead to a huge disaster. I don't think they were to blame for that specific incident.
Right, right. Well, I think some of them, whoever has these Antifa Facebook or Twitter accounts, I think they came out and said something about Las Vegas, and they try to, right, like, these groups try to take credit, right, to boost their image and make them feel like they're big and powerful, and it's not always the case that they're responsible for it. What about this Alabama Senate race? I know you made a YouTube video about this. What do you think is going on here?
Yeah, I wish that Roy Moore would have won, obviously. They really came out against him and tried to brand him as a pedophile. He sort of got swept up in the Me Too-ism thing. And all these accusers that suddenly popped up after this man had a public career of decades, never heard this stuff, but he runs for Senate and they come out of the woodwork. Well, as soon as he loses, they vanish. So this is, can you remember what exactly I was talking about in the video? I don't remember what I was arguing in that video.
You brought up, at least in the first part of it, the demographic impacts. You were showing a CNN poll about how they broke down, how, I think it was 70% men.
Oh, yeah.
That voted That's for right. more.
Yeah, it was, you know, of course, more of the men are going to vote for more because they don't care about the sexual indiscretion stuff as much as the women. The Democrats are always going to try and get to those married white women who traditionally vote Republican by saying, you know, this guy doesn't respect women or what have you. But it really broke down along racial lines more than the gender lines. That was the surprising thing, is they thought that they were going to have this big upheaval of women voting against Roy Moore, but really they just had a huge black turnout. And of course the black vote was upwards of 90% for Roy Moore. And when you're talking about the black female vote, the black female vote is the most solid constituency that the Democrats have, because they vote like 97% plus for Democrats.
Wow.
So they are completely in racial solidarity in their politics. But meanwhile, the Republicans continue to disavow any identitarianism, despite the fact that, you know, their voters are overwhelmingly white. In the Judge Roy Moore election, I think 70, 75, 76% of the white men went for Roy Moore, and it was a slightly less but similar number for the white women. And these Republican strategists who are of the George Bush type constantly want to change their values to appeal to the base black voters or base Latino voters, whatever. And I don't think that they need to do that. I think that there are some black voters and Latino voters who just, for whatever reason, they don't hate white people, no matter what the Democrats are going to say. So they're going to vote Republican. And they're probably more interested in traditional Republican issues like tax cuts and personal liberty or what have you. But the Republicans need to get on board with appealing explicitly to their white voters,
right,
and let them know that the Democrats are waging a war against white America, and they don't have anybody to defend them except for us. You know, us, the grassroots people in the alt-right or pro-white movement, whatever you want to call it. And we need backup. We need real leadership from Washington. And I think that they could win these elections not by trying to cater to these mythical minority voters who supposedly would vote Republican and are supposedly conservative, but to explicitly say, hey, you see all this BS that's going on with the crime rate, the black black and white crime rates, the mass immigration, the fact that it's harder than ever for you and your children to move up the corporate ladder because of all these affirmative action policies. Well, we are here to get your back and drive that number from like 76% white men, move that up to 97% like the Democrats have got for the black women.
Right, right. I think with this last election, Trump versus Hillary, we saw if you're a Republican and you're white, you're not non-white candidate, you've seen the playbook of how to get elected as a Republican. You have got to hammer on jobs, immigration, all the core issues that will bring every possible white voter out to vote for you. And if you don't get every possible white voter out there to get excited and enthusiastic about voting for you, you're not going to win. I think this past time, Trump really capitalized on that. And I know that was the guy from Breitbart who was probably game planning that whole thing. What's his name? I forget. Bannon. Bannon probably game planned that thing and knew that. But the Democrats, if they want to win the presidency, they have to run, in my opinion, a non-white candidate. And I know that Hillary more or less bought the party and took it over and kind of screwed them out of that chance. It seems like more of them wanted Bernie. But we're going to see things break down to racial demographic lines, don't you think, from here on out?
Yeah, absolutely. And the longer the Republicans are refusing to specifically acknowledge their white constituency and how important it is to them and how important white people are historically to this country, the worse that they're making it for themselves in the long run, because the only future of the Republican Party is in white solidarity. Otherwise, they're basically going to become what the Democrats are now in 10, 20 years, and the Democrat Party is going to be a revolutionary communist party. The only hope that they have is starting to wake the ethnic consciousness of white America.
Right, right.
We need more people like Paul Nealon, frankly, who's coming out and saying it's okay to be white and specifically acknowledging his constituency. And there's people who, even a year ago, we were hailing as champions of the alt-right, like Steve Bannon, and they're disavowing and cutting ties. But Paul Nealon is making a principled stand, and he's hopefully the first of many, because once you have that tidal shift where there's many candidates who are willing to come out and say it's okay to be white, white people are good people, and we need to respect their issues, it's time for their voices to be heard, then I think that the dam is going to break, and these people like Steve Bannon are going to have no choice but to explicitly respect us.
I'm sure you understand this principle and you know it, but I got to say, talking about red pillars and who's the most effective, I got to say, I think it's someone who isn't even in the alt-right, so to speak. I think the most effective red pillar for white people is none other than Colin Flaherty on YouTube. What do you think about Colin's work? I'm sure you're aware of him.
Yeah. I'm not as familiar with Colin. I know about his stuff. What is the name of his book? White Kid Bleed a Lot or White Girl Bleed a Lot?
There you go. Yeah, White Girl Bleed a Lot. And then he had another one, Don't Make the Black Kids Angry, which was part of a quote from a black town councilman or district attorney, and his YouTube page is huge. His approach is what we need to do. He does without apology and without rancor. He just presents the facts. He shows black on white crime, black on Hispanic crime, black on Asian crime, and he doesn't get into any of the pro-white stuff. He just presents the facts. And if you hit normie people with 10 or 15 of those videos, it's overwhelming. You just walk away with this overwhelming sense of, oh my God, this is incredible. So, my only two cents.
Yeah, I remember a lot of people bringing him up to me when I was first exposing Wes Bellamy, and I did have a few conversations with Colin. It wasn't in depth. I was trying to talk to him, but I guess maybe he's more of the type that doesn't engage with the public as much, and that didn't end up going anywhere really. But let me give you an example of how your listeners and people all across this country could start making a difference by doing some activism. You could take that information that is in those clarity videos about black crime rates, and you could go to your local city council and start talking about this stuff and raising awareness of it. And people might think, well, what's the difference? All that's going on is not just national, but it's an international program to eliminate white people from the face of the earth. What does it matter if I go to my city council? But when you do that, it can develop into a big thing, like with what I've done. There was a local man named Joe Drago here in Charlottesville. And before I ever got involved in the local politics, he went before city council and he was talking about Islamic crime rates and terrorism and the rate of rape of white women when they come over. And he was supposed to be given 3 minutes of time, but these city councilors got so triggered that they had the police drag him from the chamber. And you know what he did? He got a civil rights attorney and he sued them and he made a bunch of money. So that's the kind of thing that we've got to do. That's how these leftists won, is they were willing to go up front, say the hard, their truth, and then they sued in court when their First Amendment rights weren't respected. So if our people are willing to take that chance, you know, hey, you might be able to make some money out of it and you might be able to make a real difference.
Right, right. Excellent. Great example. Great idea, too. In closing here, why don't you wrap up and tell us, I know you have a GoFundMe. Give us the details on how we can help you and any closing thoughts you want to share with the listeners.
Yeah, the funding options are kind of in flux right now. GoFundMe and Patreon have been experiencing issues with their payment processing. If you want to donate to my efforts, then that's much appreciated, because I've got all these legal battles. I've got a lot of lawyers to pay to fight these battles that are important for our people. You can go to my website, jasonkessler.us, and there's a donate link, jasonkessler.us/donate, where I can accept credit card donations or Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies. You can also check me out on my different social media platforms. Subscribe to me on YouTube. PewTube, I'm on Gab, and Twitter as at the Mad Dimension.
All right, excellent. Jason, thanks for being with me. I certainly appreciate it. I hope we can do it again in the not-too-distant future. Best of luck to you in 2018, and thank you for being with me tonight. I appreciate it. God bless you, brother.
Yeah, God bless you. Happy New Year.
All right, have a good one, my friend. Bye-bye. All right, there you go, folks. Jason Kessler of jasonkessler.us now is the website. I was seeing in the chat room that we were having some technical difficulties and bad audio quality. In an attempt to salvage the quality, I shut down the conference line. I will now open that back up. We have got another hour here of my program. If you wish to join in and participate, comment, question, anything, by all means, be my guest. I would certainly love to participate with you and do kind of an open lines thing. I'm sure most people probably have to go back to work and the party has stopped in celebration of New Year's, so maybe we can get a few people to come. But if you want to join the conversation, if you want to come on and talk to me or bring up an issue or say your piece, I have open lines to do that. If you want to connect, go to Eurofolk Radio or eurofolkradio.com, go in the chat room, and earlier this afternoon I posted the links. I now have the conference line open. Punch in the pin or click the link and go to it, and I can bring you up and we can interact. So I am getting that opened up. Let me open up the volumes here. Uh, As I was saying before, earlier, I have been doing a few projects regarding some of the interests that I have. I recently finished Jim Garrison, the New Orleans district attorney, his book about the Kennedy assassination, On the Trail of the Assassins. I have read it in its entirety and put it up on my site, tedmidward.info, as well as my YouTube channel, which is under the name Ted Midward. I'm also doing Henry Ford's The International Jew. I'm about halfway through it. I do about an hour of it a week, and I started about 6 months ago, so probably in another 6 months I'll be wrapping that up. I have kind of stepped off the gas as far as interviews and programs go for the moment because I've been busy with other things the past few weeks, and I'm hoping to get back in the swing here and crank things back up. Getting a beeping here on freeconference.com. It looks like I am connected and I don't hear the music in the background. So I believe I am dialed in and connected. I'll keep it on mute for the moment so that we don't have the incessant beeping. There is a point I want to address that I brought up, and I hope I conveyed it clear enough that it was comprehensible to Jason, is that oftentimes some of the biggest breakthroughs for us politically speaking in converting people to our side, to see things our way, to wake people up, actually happens to be the other side and their monkey business, their shenanigans, their bad behavior, their crimes. It's my opinion that some of the best ways to wake people up are to show them what happened in Baltimore, in Ferguson, the riots in Milwaukee, all the violent crime against police and law enforcement, black crime statistics. In my experience, trying to lecture people, trying to talk to them reasonably, doing all this kind of stuff, it doesn't get through to them. They're just too stubborn to listen to someone else. They think they know it all. And it's only when you put overwhelming audio-visual evidence in front of them, like a video clip, that you can ever reach them. You can't reach them through common sense. Half of them are too scared to admit the truth because it's going to rock their world. The other half know it's true but won't say anything about it because they have a job and some wage slave job to protect and family to provide for, that kind of thing. They don't want to lose out what they've worked for, which is understandable, but there comes a point where if you have an enemy moving against you and you continue to ignore it, you continue to keep on marching, hoping that things get better, what goes around comes around, and it's only a matter of time until you or friends or family are the ones who are victimized. That's the way it works. I hope this quality is coming through all right. I know we had an echo from some of the people in the chat room, but anyways, I'm a little backed up on my project list. Like I said, I've kind of taken my foot off the gas. There's certainly people I need to get with for interview requests, that kind of thing, that piqued my interest in. It's a lot of back and forth and searching for email addresses and trying to get through to them. And it seems usually like a direct message on Facebook to their direct Facebook page is the best way to go about it. And I am currently on a 30-day ban on Facebook, so my options are a little limited at the moment. But there's a lot of books I need to get through, and some of them are older. Old enough so that I feel confident reading them and not having them removed and having someone get all mad at me for breaking copyright, that kind of thing. So I'm a little a little limited on my options, but at the same time, some of the newer stuff, like Colin Flaherty's book, I don't want to take away from that guy and take money out of his pocket and put his stuff out there for free. So I'm going to focus on some of the older historical stuff. My first love really was jumping into conspiracy history as a teenager. And there's still a lot of books that I have yet to read and go into. And I think I can fill that niche and enjoy it myself. And I'll go ahead and record them while I read them. And I'll put them up on YouTube. I'll put them out in MP3 format on my site so that people all around the world, people in the future, can listen to it and get that education. I think most people are open to listening to something. I know I love listening to talk radio, podcasts, all that sort of thing. And I have to say, I'm just like everyone else. I'm much more likely to listen to something because I have more time to listen than I do have time or the discipline, really, to sit down and read something. It really takes a lot of discipline to sit down, turn off all the electronic gadgets, and put your attention solely on a book. And unfortunately, that's just one of the directions that we're going in as a society. But reading is so important in getting back to the basic facts and having them fresh in your mind. It's so important to do that. And I think that's going to be where I can help out the most and something that I can stay motivated to do. So there's a whole lot. There's a ton of PDFs that I've collected over the years that I plan on reading. And a lot of books, physical books, paperback, hardback, that I've accumulated over the years. And hopefully I can record some of them and then maybe clear out some space, sell them, get rid of them. Help me out that way too. So I guess that's what you can look forward to in 2018. There are a lot of interviews, and I have to say, I don't get as much pushback or hesitancy from people that I thought I would get doing and covering the kind of content that I cover. There are a few, and funny enough, it's usually from people on our own side, people that are militant atheists or militant pagans, that kind of thing, and they go to my page for all 5 seconds and see the title and see some of the content, and they make kind of a knee-jerk reaction. I don't really come against people. I mean, if you wanna think that Odinism or paganism, that kind of thing, and that's what you want to believe, I'm not gonna try to shove anything down your throat. And I've kind of learned my lesson with that. You're not gonna convince people who are convinced of something. You're not gonna change them otherwise. And people have to come to some sort of thought line or belief on their own. If you try to force it on them, they're going to resist. I think that's just natural human nature. So I get pushback from people that, in kind of old school white nationalism, kind of like the William Pierce crowd, right? They want nothing to do with some of the more CI, or they perceive it as just regular Judeo-Christianity. But those are the people that I've really had pushback from, believe it or not. Again, I want to apologize to the folks listening in live on Eurofolk Radio. We had some technical difficulties. Apparently, the stream was buggy, and I think we missed maybe the first 8 or 10 minutes here of my call with Jason Kessler. Jason Kessler was the man who organized the Unite the Right rally back in, August 12th of 2016, that made front page news in Charlottesville, Virginia. And a lot of speculation about him, which I heard and remember trying to look into at the time, and I don't think he was anything more than what he says it was or that it appeared to be. I think there was a lot of pro-white, alt-right people that wanted to go out and have a rally, do a march, and kind of show people we're here and we're not going to necessarily just roll over and die. And they got a court-issued permit from some other kind of mid- or lower-level court, and the Charlottesville Police Department, Charlottesville Law Enforcement, and maybe some of Terry McAuliffe's, the governor of Virginia, some of his goons, perhaps, clamped down on them and decided, you know what, we're not going to order the court-issued permit. We're going to go ahead and do what we want to do, and we're going to come out here and shut you down, and we're going to make you walk through 3-4 times as many left-wing protesters as you guys have here at your right-wing rally. And, I mean, I guess that let that be a lesson to you, that you can't trust the government. They will backstab, and they will snake you every chance possible. And I think some of those guys learned that, Jason himself included, and good. I can't say enough about how much courage that man has to go out and do what he did. I don't know if you guys saw the video of him days after the rally going out there at a podium with his jeans and blazer on and facing down a mob of rabid anti-white leftists that attacked him, tried to tackle him, tried to punch him, while the police just stood there and let them get away with battery and assault. And thank God he was able to escape their clutches and continue on with his thing. There's a lot of different directions that I could go with this in my thoughts as to how to overcome this politically, if it's even possible at this point. And the thing is, white people just absolutely have to change their entire attitude. Most white people, most white Americans, are fat, lazy, soft, and stupid, and don't care about anything, about getting their rocks off, pleasuring themselves. Basically, pure modern hedonism, living for the moment, all that type of thing. And it's going to get to a point, and it already is here, and it already has been here, where white people are being persecuted, and it's going to take that to wake some of these idiots up. And some of them, you can persecute them from here for the next century, and you will never wake them up because they're stuck on stupid. Some of them you're just never going to reach, and you need to be content with that. Most people go along to get along, and this is the difference of the white race versus everyone else, especially white Americans. They have an ethos, an ethic, a moral system of go along to get along with everyone, don't rock the boat, and be nice to everyone and treat them how you would like to be treated. Unfortunately for white people, non-whites, Jews, blacks, Arabs, Muslims, Asians, everyone else, no one else is stupid enough to adopt that system. It's a very altruistic, idealistic, liberal belief system. And it's absolutely why we're in the situation that we are. I have no doubt about it. Whites are trained to go along to get along. That's how most of them get their paycheck. That's how most of them survive a relationship, survive a marriage, survive a family, and survive in this country. Go along to get along, keep your mouth shut, don't rock the boat, don't stand up for yourself, and everything will be fine. And there's going to come a point where some of them realize that basically they have nothing left to lose by bucking that system. And I'm not talking about physically with violence per se. It's funny, in my experience, in my own life, and I'm sure some of this may apply to you, but when I've made big changes in my life, I had to get extremely upset, frustrated, PO'd at a certain situation before I found myself changing it, whether it was getting in better shape or getting better educational or job opportunities, that kind of thing. We're just very content. And like I said, go along to get along. And this is, I have to think, a big reason of why we are where we are. Everyone knows that politicians are crooks and criminals, and that the people in power are bad, yet no one can find the willpower, it seems, to do anything about it. They simply don't care. And I think most of them are too caught up in just trying to exist, trying to run on the hamster wheel of paychecks and debt and keeping a family going that everything else just kind of falls by the wayside. And it seems to be a big giant trap in a sense. It's unfortunate, but that's my thought in it at the moment. Let me check the chat room, see if we got anybody in here. The problems will come when we are pushed into smaller groups, like balkanization, etc. The people who did not father are not for the remnant to mingle too tightly with by his law. Yeah, Harry, I guess according to the scripture, I mean, we're not going to have some big giant wake up, it seems. It seems like there's only going to be a remnant that stay true, right? I think that's kind of Orthodox Christian identity teaching, as far as I understand it. So I think you are right with that. And white people are, because we're losing numbers, because the white population is mostly baby boomers who are retiring, if not entering their golden years at this point. And the Bob Hope generation that came before the baby boomers that were born in the 20s and 30s, they're most certainly up there. Maybe half of my family members who are of that Bob Hope generation are gone. They've passed on. So white people are going to have to do something, especially the ones who are awake. They're going to have to rely on each other. And you're going to have to get out of these cities, out of these urban metro areas where it's overwhelmingly non-white. And you guys know I did a program in the past. I did an interview in the past with Harold Covington about the Butler Plan, about Northwest migration. And something, whites are going to have to do something. Let me just say that. They're going to have to come together or else they're just going to lose everything they have. And this country is going to be a giant Chicago or Detroit or Los Angeles or Baltimore. And white people are just going to be preyed upon by the jackals and the hyenas. And everyone perceives, the non-whites in America perceive whites as the mark, as the victim, as the prey. Whites don't respect themselves as a group. And therefore, nobody else respects us because we don't respect ourselves. And people see that. You think these non-whites don't see that? They see an old grandma going to the grocery store by herself, no son, no husband, no one there to protect her, and they see an easy victim. They rob her, steal her purse, beat her up in the parking lot. That's how these people operate. They hunt in groups. And it's not a good situation when we're being outnumbered and we're losing political power, not only at the national federal level, but at the local level too. You heard Jason talk about the local politicians in the local government there in Charlottesville. They have radical blacks and radical, even white, anti-white liberals that are in power, that are making policy, that are picking and choosing which laws they're going to obey and those they're going to disobey. You know, I thought I knew a lot. And I still think like I know a lot because I spent so much time going over the news, trying to learn about things. And it's still funny. The first time I saw a map, which was probably like, I don't know, a year ago back the Trump-Hillary election. The first time I saw a map of the United States and all the sanctuary cities. And it was incredible. It was jaw-dropping to me. I had no clue it was that bad. Now, you're talking about local town councils, city governments, municipal governments that openly choose to disobey a federal law. And if it were any other issue, nobody would be getting away with it. But because it's the immigration laws and immigration enforcement, and the elites of this country have decided to scrap it in order to promote white genocide, all these places, Denver, Colorado, San Francisco, California, you name it, Texas, all these places have scrapped these laws and they pick and choose which laws they're going to enforce. This is a huge problem. And whatever happens, whether we get the power back or the whole thing just kind of disintegrates and we turn into Detroit, America, I hope someone who picks up the pieces in the future will realize we ought to think twice about having a centralized government where all the power is in one hands, and power can be consolidated over decades and centuries, because we're going to end up at the exact same point. That's my thinking. That's my opinion on it thus far. You know, I think things are bad in the United States, and certainly the situation's not favorable. I think that's at least fair to say. But my goodness, these Europeans over there, I mean, you talk about sitting ducks. These people have no weapons. Their guns were taken away. They can't even have, like, butter knives to protect themselves. These people are just sitting around waiting to be slaughtered. It's incredible to me that I know some of them can't get out, and they have nowhere to go, or they feel like it's hopeless, that kind of thing, but it's like, it reminds me of that quote that Alexander Solzhenitsyn is, I guess, said or had written in his memoirs or his books about how they burned in the camps, thinking about how they had the chance to fight back and kill some of the political commissars and their lower rank subordinate goy who came after them, and instead they went along with it and didn't fight back, and now they're starving to death in a work camp, being worked to exhaustion until they die, and how they missed their opportunity. I kind of think it's the same way with the Europeans. Wow, what a nightmare. And the issue of protecting yourself, having the means to protect yourself, a lot of people in the alternative media they didn't like that I was supporting Trump the way I did. And it wasn't that I was an over-the-top Trump fanboy who thought Trump was going to be the Führer, Adolf Hitler, our savior, like some people over at Daily Stormer were putting that meme out. I didn't necessarily think that. I didn't buy that. I certainly didn't promote that. But I understood that we need to keep the Second Amendment as long as we possibly can. And that alone, that issue alone of getting even a watered-down, middle-of-the-road moderate on the Supreme Court is better than having Hillary appoint a radical leftist. That alone was worth voting for Trump, no matter how much you want to talk about Jared Kushner being involved, being the real puppet master, and Benjamin Netanyahu having an inordinate amount of influence over Trump. Those things are certainly true, but we have got to fight for every little table scrap we can possibly get to keep what we have. If we lose the Second Amendment in this country, if we lose the right to defend ourselves, guys, you can pretty much hang it up, in my opinion. And I hope I'm wrong by saying that, but history tells me that I simply wouldn't be in such a scenario. Had a message from Harry here in the chat room talking about he has friends over in Europe and he doesn't think he can get through to them. Perhaps there's games being played. I know certainly Merkel, Angela Merkel, has been at banquets with the head of Facebook, what's his name, Zuckerberg, and they pressure and they use Facebook like a police force. I don't know if you guys have seen the tweets on Twitter of the Sussex British police. I know there's parody accounts now that make over-the-top ridiculous posts in jest about them, but these governments over in Europe, they use Facebook as the essentially the telescreen in the living room. In reference to George Orwell's 1984, they're using Facebook as a way to monitor people, to shut them down, and get them arrested. That's how far we've gotten with this. I sent a message to a friend about the clergy plan, and boom, no more contact. Yeah, well, maybe games are being played, but maybe again, white people, I've got friends, I've got a whole family of them that you try to tell them something and they don't want to hear it. They don't need to hear it. Don't tell us anymore, Ted. You can't tell us anything. We already know it all. That's how they are. And that's why they're, sadly, bound for destruction. You can't tell them anything. You can't show them anything. They're stiff-necked. They're backsliding. And they're going to get what's coming to them. As bad as it's going to be. They're asking for it. They're begging for it. And they don't understand that, but that's what they're doing. All the liberalism, all the weakness, you are asking to be devoured. Yeah, ice is scare in a small town in Ireland. You know what? I'm surprised that there isn't, and maybe there is, and I'm just not hearing about it. I'm surprised that there isn't just an all-out, just Night of the Long Knife style mass killing and raping of whites in the middle of the night by Africans and Asia Minor immigrants from like Pakistan and all these non-whites. The armies of Gog and Magog that are flooding into the land of true Israel. I cannot believe that that more whites aren't dying and being victimized. I really, when you think about the numbers and you think about the scale that it's on, I'm actually surprised that that isn't taking place. I'm glad it isn't yet, trust me, but it's, I can't imagine the daily fear, the daily terror you would have living in one of these small hamlets or these towns in Germany or France where these no-go zones, these Muslim zones just keep creeping slowly but steadily. And it's incredible. I cannot believe this is happening. And there's just no men. All the men... And to be fair, the 20th century was more or less the complete suicide of European men. Probably the best in the gene pool died in the two world wars. The most alpha, the best of the gene pool, 20 million Germans dead as a result of World War II. The Jewish-inspired event known as World War II. The war to save international Jewish usury. Is what it ought to be named. But it really is amazing that really there's any white people left. Two world wars, an American Civil War, countless European wars and battles between neighbor states in the 1,000 years prior to that. And then a 1,400 year history of Islamic sword and conquest into Eastern and Southern Europe. Not to mention the Black Plague. It's incredible. It's incredible there's any of us left, to be quite honest with you. It's astounding. Yeah, you know what? It is heartbreaking that such nice people are just stuck on stupid. And being nice in this world, it is a death sentence. The older I get, the more I realize that. People only respond, people only respect two things. Fear and violence. That's the sad fact. And especially non-whites, especially blacks. Blacks do not respect reason. They only respect fear and brute force or violence. That's all they understand. That's the only way you can persuade them to leave you alone. And of course, whites refuse to protect themselves, so nobody respects them. And if you don't respect yourself, why should your enemies respect you? You know, I wanted to say, too, I tried to make a note of this and to remind myself, I've been listening more recently to some of the shows here on EFR, which honestly, I'm usually caught up in my own little bubble world of my own personal stuff and trying to figure out where I'm going next for content and what projects I'm going to work on, editing audio. And I really find myself not having time to follow some of the old stuff that I used to. I'm a big podcast and talk radio fan, a big YouTube fan. I've had a YouTube account for, I don't know, 8 or 9 years. 8 or 9 years I've had a YouTube sign in, and I've subscribed to all these different channels. And I have to say, it is an excellent way to keep up on happenings and what's going on. Great news, great opinion, great analysis. But I've been listening to more shows, and these other guys on EFR, they've got great content, guys. This site is coming up, in my opinion. They've got great content, great range, great creativity, and this thing's really representing racial identity, Israel identity, in a magnificent way, if I may say so. And it's just a matter of plugging away, keeping at it, and putting it out there. YouTube is a great way of getting more people on. Unfortunately, in my experience, I've had probably 3 or 4 channels over the past 8, 9 years shut down for comments I've said, or I've tried posting an entire archive of Eustace Mullins radio appearances, and because these audio files have the bumper music between shows, like on RBN and GCN and some of these alternative media sites, I get copyright strikes on my YouTube channel. And eventually you get enough of them, and your channel gets shut down. I was hoping my next issue of American Free Press would be coming, but checked the mail here and I didn't have any new ones. I was looking forward to hearing and seeing what they would put out next. And John Friend, I guess, I don't know if he's an independent contractor with them or if he's a regularly staffed columnist for them, but he's always in there and doing good work from what I see. Pretty good articles. From the conspiracy history world, so to speak. That was kind of my first love, and kind of where I cut my teeth on it, and I still find myself going back to it. I check Jeff Rentz's site just about daily, and I don't necessarily agree with every little thing, and I think he's taken a more pro-white, anti-non-white, racialist message over the past few years, which it is nice to see other people see this too. It's not just me hallucinating or overreacting. I'm actually shocked at how these people like Alex Jones or Jeff Rentz or even the RBN, Republic Broadcasting. I remember 10 years ago, Republic Broadcasting had Jewish hosts and had really just like, and they were good for its time. Like Daryl Smith was on there, Michael Collins Piper, Victor Thorne, I think, had a show on there for a while. Christopher Boleyn would show up, and they were more, they kind of styled themselves as just anti-Zionist, right? But, you know, I tune into RBN now, and they have people talking about, on various shows, the issues of white genocide, about demographic replacement, about the extinction of the white race. You would have never heard that 10 years ago on these sites, like even Alex Jones. Sometimes he will talk about it. RBN, I've been really surprised how things have changed and people have really stepped their game up and started telling more of the truth. It's nice to see that happening, I must say. But that's all the kind of stuff that I really cut my teeth on. when I was younger, and I kind of stumbled into learning about Christian identity from a James Wickstrom sermon that I had heard that I think Daryl Smith had posted on his site, IamTheWitness.com, at the time. So I got to say, I think more and more people are opening their eyes to it, and they're realizing the Jews lie about everything, the Bible included. The Jews lie about the world wars. They lie about the Federal Reserve banking, money, and credit system. They lie about these wars in the Middle East. They lie in the news media. So why should we believe them at their word when it comes to anything about the Bible or the scriptures or ancient history, anything like that? And I think that is the correct approach. We should stop believing them at face value, look into it for ourselves, and make up our own minds about it. And I think a lot of people have done that. And there's many people right here on EFR that do an excellent job analyzing that, breaking it down, and proving how the white Caucasian race is the true Israel of Scripture. Now we have an opiate crisis in many places. It's scary. Well, that's absolutely true. You know what? I've seen articles in the past few months, maybe even up to a year, really, where they have certain projections for white demographics in the United States, and they've actually had to speed up the white extinction. I guess I'll use that as the term, because middle-aged Gen Xers and baby boomers are dying sooner than expected. They're not dying in their 70s or 80s now. Some of them are dying from overwork, drug abuse, like the opioid crisis, alcoholism, substance abuse. Whites are more or less, I guess, subconsciously like wrecking themselves because of the miserable lives that they live, because they've bought into the system or they've been abused by the system. Or they live in non-white neighborhoods where they've been victimized. Our people are the warning and the crying signs are everywhere that there's a problem, and actually dying off and being replaced faster than expected, which is extremely scary. I know other folks and probably listeners here on EFR that are older than I am, and coming from someone who was born in the 80s, my perspective, this whole thing is especially scary because I'm usually the youngest, or I have been the youngest member of my family at some points, me and my siblings. And my baby boomer aunts and uncles, my Bob Hope generation grandparents, they're all reaching the end of life. And my grandparents on one side of my family, Grandma had 9 brothers and sisters. Grandpa had 11 other siblings. Then my parents, father was an only child. Mother had 4 siblings. One of them died as a teenager being hit by a drunk driver. And those aunts and uncles that I have, one of them went on to have kids, the others didn't. And it really shows how we've gone from 30+% 100 years ago of the planetary population down to 7, 8, 9, maybe 10% today. And I think about what kind of country, what kind of world I'm going to be living in say 40, 50 years as I'm approaching my 80s and my end of life, and what kind of world am I going to be living in? Is it going to be it's basically going to be like Camp of the Saints. We're going to be huddled in some kind of medieval stone castle with a moat of alligators around us trying to fend off non-whites who are trying to rape, kill, pillage, plunder, steal, murder, loot, burn everything we have. It's certainly scary to think about, and that's why I think something like the Butler Plan, Northwest Migration, it's not the worst thing in the world. It's not perfect, I admit that, but gonna have to do something. We cannot just be picked off one by one and be surrounded by people who hate us and want to devour us. That is not gonna work. So I am keeping this in mind as things play out, and I plan for the future, and I live my life. And I'm aware of these things now and have been, and I have to say, even though my parents are not or were not then staunch, you know, extreme right-wingers like I am, they at least had enough sense not to send me and my siblings to a non-white school system or a heavily black school system. They at least had sense enough not to do that and recognize that that would be a problem. So we moved and lived in a better part with better schools, i.e. whiter schools. And again, I think it comes back to people know this, but they lie to themselves because they can't lose their job. They can't lose. This is how under the yoke, under the gun, how strangled we are by political correctness. White people know that it's not necessarily a lie to say that things are the way they are racially, but to say them in public when your job is on the line and your only means is supporting yourself and paying off the mortgage, the car note, the credit card, all these debts that they have, all these bills, that they're going to lose they think they're going to lose everything they have. In some cases, I think they might actually free themselves from the burden of certain lifestyles that they're living, but that's a whole nother subject and an issue that I guess we'd have to spend more time on in the future. Seeing as how we have about 15 minutes left. The issue of, this is kind of not related, kind of just out of left field here, but the issue of cryptocurrencies, I'd be curious to hear what some of the people think here on Eurofolk Radio about this and get their take on it. I've heard a few programs in the past. I think it was Doc Waterman who came on, and him and his associates who were speaking about this one day, and I've been trying to learn more about it since about May or June, and it's interesting. I just can't wrap my head around the fact that these things could actually challenge Jewish central bank fiat money issuance power. I find it very hard to believe that this is actually a legitimate threat to our financial monetary system. A lot of people out there, a lot of the people on Reddit in the cryptocurrency communities, they're very enthusiastic and they think this is going to kill the banking system, it's going to kill JP Morgan and the Federal Reserve, and they're all gung-ho about it. I'm not necessarily jumping on that train just yet. I think there is potential there, and they are interesting to learn about, but that's something that I've been digging into as of late. And it's been all over the news. Everyone likes to say that cryptocurrencies, Bitcoin in particular, that they're bubbles, that they're going to go to zero, that they're worthless, there's nothing backing them. And there's some truth in what they're saying, but I never hear anyone say this. The people who are saying this about Bitcoin, I never hear them say this about the stock market, the New York Stock Exchange. That thing is at 24,000. That thing is a bubble. That thing is overvalued. That thing is primed to crash. That thing cannot keep going parabolically up on the chart ad infinitum. It's funny, when Trump was a candidate, or running for the nomination even, he would call out Janet Yellen in the Federal Reserve, and he said in one of the debates with Hillary that the only thing good about the economy was the fact that the stock market was high, and that if they raise interest rates, the stock market too would come tumbling down, that the entire thing was a giant bubble. Well, all of a sudden, a year in as president, now it's a good thing to have a bubbled stock market. Well, I don't think it is. I think it's extremely dangerous, and what goes up must come down eventually. And when you have a bull market since spring 2009, when it dropped down to 6,000, and now it's quadrupled up to 24,000, it's just as much, if not a bigger bubble than Bitcoin. That's what I think. But I don't hear people saying that. I hear people coming down on cryptocurrencies, and I can understand that. I get it. I get where they're coming from. It doesn't have a solid track record. It's relatively new. There's no real reason to trust it. But they seem to be a little bit hypocritical when it comes to the stock market and the orthodox financial environment. I am, of course, in favor of getting rid of the Federal Reserve and Jewish usury money systems in the fiat paper money gimmick game. But it's my opinion that if you do have a fiat money system, you cannot implement 0% interest rates, because it will debauch the environment. It will ruin the value of your currency. And one of the characteristics, or one of the things that comes out of having a 0% interest rate, is the fact that there's no real safe, legitimate, easy way to make a return on your money, because the central banks have made money essentially worthless, saying that it deserves a 0% yield. So guess what? People are led to wild speculation, wild gambling, extreme betting, extremely risky financial moves, like speculating on virtual currencies, in order to gain some type of return. Because you can't go to a bank and get a checking deposit account. You can't get any savings account that'll pay you anything. And if you just sit there and hoard cash under your mattress, well, you're losing purchasing power over time due to inflation and the exponential increase of the money supply. Not only that, but it hurts your senior citizens who have hopefully acquired some type of nest egg for their golden years, their retirement years, if that's really even possible in this kind of financial environment. And then once they get there, they can't live off the interest accrued every year, 7, 8, 9, 10% like it used to be. So not only does the Jewish money system rip us off, but they also impoverish us by doing this zero interest rate monkey business that they do. It's punishing savers. Why should people save $10, $20, $30, $40, $50,000 and be responsible when there's nowhere to put it, there's no way to make a return on your money? They're punishing savers. They're punishing responsible people. And instead, they're encouraging people to speculate by borrowing money at well, I wouldn't say low rates, because the commercial banks get it for 0% from the Federal Reserve banks, but the end consumer, it's not like they benefit from 0% interest rates, because they're still going to get credit cards that charge 29.99% interest. So there is no benefit to the consumer. And the Jews at the Federal Reserve and Wall Street, they have done this to delay the inevitable collapse of the monetary system. That's why they've done 0% interest rates, because they know, boy, these interest rates are a tricky thing. If we raise it too high and suck a third of the money supply out of existence like they did back in 29, boy, we're really going to be in a world of hurt, and this time the goyim are going to come after us with pitchforks, knives, and guns. They aren't going to be all nice about it like they were in the 1930s. Yeah, that's exactly why they're doing this. It's just a delaying tactic. A lot of people like to and rightfully so, criticize Yellen, Bernanke, Greenspan. But I think one of the most responsible, one of the most respectable Jewish chairman of the Federal Reserve was actually Paul Volcker in the early 1980s. He did what was responsible. He raised interest rates to 18, 19, 20%, something high like that. And he brought value back to the U.S. dollar. And he gave the American people who earned dollars an ever-appreciating asset. And he punished people who wanted to go get mortgages. Oh, you want to go get a mortgage? You want to borrow money for 30 years? Here, you're going to pay 18, 19, 21, 22, 23, an upward percent. I don't remember the exact figures of back then, but if you're going to have a fiat money system and you want it to be healthy and have a healthy country and society and foster development and growth and longevity, you can't have 0% interest rates. You ruin the integrity of the money. Then again, if we run out of white people in America to keep the machine going, you can pretty well hang it up. It's all over then anyway, in my opinion. Comment here in the chat room. I thought Bitcoin was tied to the dark web, the Silk Road, and was taken over by the FBI when they arrested the founder. I believe it's tied to deep state, and it will be weaponized to create a crisis. Maybe, maybe not. Yeah, you know what? That's interesting. I saw someone on YouTube, Chris Duane, report that the biggest holder of Bitcoin specifically was not some individual. It actually is the FBI. That's what this man, Chris Duane, is claiming. And apparently they knew about this back in 08, 09, 2010, back when this thing was up and coming and recently created. And I'm sure they knew about it. I don't know how they couldn't be, but see, that's another thing where they try to paint cryptocurrencies as, oh, it's the freeway to criminals and drug dealers. And well, you can say the same thing about cash. Criminals, drug dealers, profiteers, and really war profiteers, warmongers, lying politicians, they love the U.S. dollar. They love cash. They love the modern financial system. That's how they get what they want. And I'm far more worried about them than I am some small-time criminal using Bitcoin in the underworld. People can do that with cash just the same. But there's a war on cash. They want to get rid of it so that you have all electronic money. And then when you come out and do a show on EFR or somewhere else and you say something the controllers don't like, then magically a little glitch will occur with your electronic account. And boy, for some reason, they just can't figure it out. But Mr. Midward, your account seems to be frozen. I don't know how this happened, but boy, it seems like you can't access your money anymore. That's exactly why they have a war on cash and want to get rid of it, because cash is independence. It's off-the-record transactions. And that's another thing, kind of like the Second Amendment, cash is another battle where we have to win and maintain what we have. If not, we're one inch closer to hell, in my opinion. Well, that's it. It's 9:57. I will be cut off. Until next time, guys, take care. God bless. Praise Christ. Praise Yahweh. Happy New Year, guys. Have a good one. Bye-bye.
You watch those nature documentaries on the cable?
Yeah.
You see the one about lions?
Yeah.
But this lion, he's the king of the jungle. Huge mane out there. He's laying down under a tree. He's so big. He's so hot. He doesn't want to move. Now, the little lion comes, they start messing with him. Biting his tail, biting his ears. He doesn't do anything. The lioness, she starts messing with him. Coming home, making trouble. Still, nothing. Now, the other animals, they notice this. They start to move in. The jackals. Hyenas. They're barking at him, laughing at him. They nip his toes and eat the food that's in his domain. They do this and they get closer and closer and bolder and bolder. Till one day, that lion gets up and tears the shit out of everybody. Like the wind, eats everything in his path. Every once in a while, the lion has to show the jackals who he is. He's too late to be scared.
Niemals ermüden und niemals vertagen und niemals verzweifeln!